I feel well looked after here. Right. Where is Akinchano? Ah, thank you so much. Didn't want to start without you. Well, Akinchano has all the beautiful words and I have the colors, so you have to do with that. And good evening, everyone. I would like to take us onto a little journey. And these two pictures, in essence, you know, they maybe describe the journey. Actually, this is a journey which we are all on, here on retreat, but also outside in our lives. So I'd like to... I've done some contemplations about silence. And this is what my talk today in principle is going to be about. Some reflections about silence. And as a start, I would like to invite you to a little exercise. And I'd like you to close your eyes just for a minute. And I hope most of you will be with that journey, you know, but for some of you that might maybe not kind of have the same feeling when I invite you into this sensate world. So I'd like you to imagine that you are in a still place, somewhere in nature, maybe here, and it isn't summer, it is winter. And you wake up early in the morning and you sense a certain quietness. And it is dark, it is in the morning, and you go outside and you open the door. And then snowflakes are slowly falling and dropping into the ground, into the snow. What kind of feeling, what kind of sensation does that give you? What happens inside you? It's kind of very interesting because when we sense, or some of, or most of you, I hope, sense into this sensation, you know, this is actually something we can tap into, you know, this is something which actually is available to us. Yeah. Even though, as I've heard today in many interviews, you know, there's a lot of thought, a lot of papancha, a lot of planning, other hindrances that cloud our mind. Actually, when we tap into it, you know, there is something available within us, a silent place, a silent resource. And during or throughout my talk, I'm going to use the words silence, stillness, and tranquility interchangeably, which maybe isn't quite correct in kind of Buddhist psychology, but it fits very well for what I would like to talk about. So I've made these two drawings. And if you imagine that the light background is what represents silence, and that the many colorful dots, you know, this is what we're all experiencing right now, or most of you, or what we're experiencing in daily life outside of this retreat. And then what happens over time is kind of when the stillness starts to pervade our mind more and more, yeah? Then we can see less of these, shall we call them, phenomena, the dhammas. These are the things that arise in our mind, and we can see them more clearly. So in essence, these two aspects, the light background, and then the phenomena that arise on this background. This is what I would like to talk about. And if there's one thing I'd like you to take away from this talk, then maybe it is just the one drawing that represents the stillness and the phenomena. Just a reminder, you know, when we have stillness, we can see the phenomena. Yeah. All right. In our society, we don't realize actually sometimes how noisy it is when we are outside, and we do not realize that silence really is a resource. I have experiences where I came off retreat, and maybe it's the same for you, when you have to go to an airport. And quite often I used to go to a center in England, and then I had to take the flight back from the airport. And when I was booking my flight, I was always hoping that it would be a particular terminal, because if it was terminal free, I knew there would be noise and music everywhere. There is no silent space. And this is really kind of a complete overload for a system that is directly coming from retreat, coming from a silent space. And terminal 5 is the much more new and quiet one. So there I knew I would find a place where I could just sit and be myself. But you know, for our society, for the culture we live in, you know, having noise and having sounds, but also images everywhere, we kind of completely overloaded. Our senses are completely overloaded. And maybe in that sense, it is not surprising that when we then come on retreat, you know, we have all these things going on, and we kind of looking for the silence, we're looking for the stillness, we're looking for the tranquility, and all we see really is the noise that is in our mind. But just be patient, you know, this is just part of the journey. Also, because you are all experienced practitioners, and as experienced practitioners, you're all looking forward to the silence, right? But silence isn't necessarily something that is so highly welcome or appreciated in our society. If your journey was similar to anything I had when I arrived here, then probably already you've been talking maybe to friends, to family, to colleagues. But what usually happens, I usually take a taxi, or I had the limo that was driving me here, and then the limo driver usually already says, "You're going to be in silence now for a week." I was like, yes, I'm going to be in silence for a week. Oh, I couldn't do that. And that's what people usually say. And it is so interesting, you know. And actually, it's maybe this reaction that has kind of made me think more about my own journey with silence. Because I don't know what it was like for you, but I mean, I probably had a similar reaction, you know. And I will talk about this later. So I was thinking about why is silence, you know, something that people fear. But when we really think about it, you know, we know that when we're in an argument in family or friends, quite often, you know, we can be silenced. You know, we don't get an answer. You know, we get the cold shoulder or something. Yeah, we know something is wrong, but we are kind of left in the uncertainty. We don't quite know what is happening. Usually the silence is much worse than actually having an argument, because then at least you know what is happening. You know, but this, I think this is one of the reasons why silence actually is not necessarily so welcome by many people and is often misunderstood when we go on retreat. Silence also comes in other forms. You know, there's the 1 minute of silence when we respectfully, you know, think of a tragedy or maybe somebody who has died, which is a tradition that actually dates back quite a long time. It goes back to the ancient Greek, but I actually started to use this, I don't know if it was a minute, but this moment of silence to respectfully remember people or members of the family. Also, there is this silent protest. You know, protests that are being held in silence are actually quite powerful. I found a proverb that says, "A lot of silence makes a mighty noise." Yeah. A lot of silence makes a mighty noise. Yeah. So, and if you really imagine, I mean, this protest in silence, I think the most prominent person that did it, but nowadays it's done quite often, and I still think very, very powerful, but Mahatma Gandhi was one of the people, you know, who did this long march in silence, you know. And this is called Satyagraha, and I really like that. This, it means holding firmly onto the truth, you know. There's something you know, there's something you're sure of, there's something you really want to pervade in a certain way, and if it is non-violent, you know, silence is a very, very powerful way of actually doing this. But when we think at these images, we can quite easily understand that silence can be a threat to some people or can feel uncomfortable. There's also a poem by Emily Dickinson, and that has to do in a one-to-one relationship. And she says, "Silence is all we dread. There is ransom in a voice, but silence is infinity. Himself hath not a face." I read it again. "Silence is all we dread. There is ransom in a voice, but silence is infinity. Himself hath not a face." You know, it's kind of what I was talking about before. You know, if there is silence sometimes and we are left in the unknown, you know, this is can feel like a very, very long time, a very long moment, you know, and we really left in the uncertainty, in the discomfort. But, I mean, here we are on retreat, and we do this voluntarily, and we go voluntarily into silence, and most of us have been looking forward to this time. And it is very interesting, you know, we do certain practices, but if you notice, also people that go on long hikes or people that go on pilgrimages, yeah, if you reduce the input, when you meet these people, when you meet somebody who has been 2 weeks hiking out there, you know, they have the same, like we have on 1 week of retreat, you know, they're fully open and their eyes are quite clear. So there's something just by actually being in silence and emerging in it and taking all the input away that by itself actually does something to our mind, does something to our heart. And I really would like you to find comfort in that, you know, because we're so struggling with practice, yeah? We're trying so hard and so much to find the silence, to find the stillness. But actually, you know, probably even if we didn't do that much, if we didn't practice that much, something still would happen, yeah? There's still a place in us that would be touched by the silence that is surrounded by us. But of course there's a difference, and I will go into the difference, you know, because it would be very nice. We could just be going hiking. We don't have to sit here, you know, so many hours, pain in the knees, pain everywhere. But then stating that, you know, when we think about hiking, we also don't think about the blisters on our feet, you know, and the pain that we have there. So I think we have a tendency, I mean, and maybe that's good because we keep on coming back to retreat. You know, it's kind of having the nice memory, you know, what it felt like towards the end and not at the start and at the beginning. So, tranquility, passati, is actually one of the awakening factors, and it's actually something which is both stillness of body and stillness of mind. So again, you know, there's something different we do than to other people because we also still our body while sitting in meditation, which again has an effect on the mind, yeah? So they both interact. So if you experience a lot of thoughts and a lot of restlessness, as has been pointed out today and I think maybe yesterday as well, you know, just placing your attention onto your body, you know, just resting in your body actually will usually help you to kind of slow down your thoughts, just alone this practice. And once we start to stabilize a little bit of this silence, you know, once it becomes a bit more clear, not so many colors, not so many phenomena that turn up, this inner silence really is something which we can tap into, you know. I was trying today in the morning, actually, during the meditation, because I was trying to listen if there is silence, because there's now the air condition, which I think wasn't switched on yesterday. You know, then you had more of a difference between the silence of the room and the birds outside. But when I was sitting today in meditation, I could still hear the air conditioning kind of more to the left, and then there was still something I could tap into, which was the stillness and the silence. For me, it was located on the right side. It's different where we locate silence or stillness inside or outside of us, you know, but there's still something behind or below this continuous noise that actually was something that resembled silence, which was something I did feel I could kind of lean into, you know, something which was a resource and something which was giving me peace of mind and peace of heart. And really, the best thing is if you can find a place inside your body, you know, that can kind of represent or be your base for stillness or for silence. So you also, outside of retreat, have a possibility to kind of tap into this resource, particularly in times where, you know, you're really stressed out or something difficult is happening, you know, at work or in your family. So really to kind of also consider to have this, to investigate, you know, where for you in inside your body or inside your mind can you actually come into contact with this stillness, with this tranquility, with this place inside you. Mm-hmm. Once we start to be able to tap more into this silence, into this stillness, we're actually also not being so pulled around so much anymore, yeah? Yeah, we find a more stability of our minds, you know, we find an inner resource, inner stability, something to lean into, something to stand on. Yeah, there's something which we can find comfort in, but also confidence, yeah? Once we know there's a place inside me where I can rest and I'm not pulled around so much, you know, I actually start to be much more confident in my practice and also outside in life. So really something to work with and to experiment with. You probably also have heard of the eight worldly winds that kind of pull us around, you know, and the pull of them, like the fame and the shame, they are much less powerful when we have a resource inside ourselves where we can actually kind of lean into and stand a bit more firm. What also happens, I think, for all of us, maybe it's already happening, is that our sensitivity towards the world increases. Yeah, we can. And that can be a good thing and a bad thing, yeah? If you sense an awful lot, you know, a lot of things can get to you. But again, if you have an inner stability, you know, that can be very beautiful because you're being touched more easily. I'm sure for most of you it has started to happen that colors become much more clear, yeah? That the noises become also more clear and, in a sense, touch you on a much deeper level than it could be before. And also, you know, we start to feel more deeply, you know. We allow ourselves to actually be moved more by what happens around us and what happens inside us. So, when we find this place, you know, also our senses actually start to be more open, more spacious, and start to be not so caught up with certain things, you know, and it's kind of as almost our vision opens up, or maybe our hearing. It depends what kind of person you are, you know, if you're more an auditory person or more a visual person. I'm quite a visual person, which is also that I came up with these drawings. So everything starts to kind of open up for us, and the reactivity goes down, and we can feel more deeply, and we actually can relax into that. A little story from my own journey in silence is when I was a very, very young person, I think maybe 18 or 19, I had friends, and they had in their family, they had a Catholic nun. And on our way to Vienna in Austria, we were kind of visiting her in her monastery. And I was curious, and I probably was also quite naive to a certain degree, you know. So I was kind of asking, you know, if she ever got time off, or, you know, what it was like to be a nun, you know, just being curious about that. And then she told me, well, she could see her family for once a week, for a year. And that was quite little to me, you know. That's what it felt. But she said, you know, but this is much better, because there are these monasteries and they're completely in silence. You know, there's actually very, very beautiful Catholic monastery on the outskirts of Vienna. And he said, and those people, they are allowed to meet a family for 2 minutes, where they are allowed to touch two fingers for the 2 minutes, you know. And that was a very scary thought to me, you know. And it was kind of, my reaction was like, oh God, 1 week is much better, you know. And everybody was looking at me, because it was quite ignorant to a certain degree. But, you know, at that point, actually, silence also was very, very uncomfortable or unknown, I think. It's the unknown that we have about silence, isn't it? It's the unknown about the stillness, because we don't know what is going to happen. And later on, I didn't start with whole week of silent retreats. I was on a retreat where they usually had a couple of days where we were talking, and then we were in silence from the evening to the morning. And then towards the end, there were 2 silent days. And that was my first really feeling and sense of what it feels like to be in silence. And it was beautiful. You know, really a new world opened to me, which then got me interested in going on longer retreats, you know, for extended periods, on silent retreats. So this was the one journey. And now I'd like to maybe look into those dots, those colorful things that we so often really just would like to get rid of, you know, the chattery mind. So what happens, not just for us, but we know what happens for people that start to meditate for the first time, and when they start to see the chattery mind for the first time, you know, sometimes they actually get quite scared, and they get quite a bit of a shock, because they start to see what actually is really going on. This is actually called the first insight. Yeah, it's called seeing the waterfall. Nowadays, I think we talk more about the highway, the mental highway. Excuse me. But it is quite interesting, isn't it? So we're here on retreat, and it is our second day, and still we're kind of wondering about all the phenomena that turn up in our mind. Yeah, we've experienced it so often, we have seen it so often, we know there's a central overload outside, yeah, and still we have this kind of expectation that we end up here, you know, and everything will be peaceful from the start. So it is a bit of a journey. And talking again about the sensual overload, it was very interesting. I was invited to participate in a Gallup survey. And I'm usually, because when I was a student, I used to be the person that, you know, went with the questionnaires and asked people, you know, could you please fill this in? And I felt really terrible about it, and most people really don't want to do it. So sometimes when something comes to me, you know, and I have kind of volunteered, they're allowed to contact me. So they sent a questionnaire to me, which was really, really, really long. It was pages and pages. But what I realized after a couple of pages is, because it was said it was a survey how I use media. So how I use the newspaper, how I use the television, and probably social media, I can't quite remember. But a couple of pages into this survey, it turned out that I actually were kind of inquiring about where do I see advertising? Yeah. So how aware am I, and where do I see advertising? And what this survey made clear to me is how unconscious I had become about all the inputs that are around all the time. You know, all the advertising there is, every bus station, every train station, Every time we go onto the internet, you know, there's advertising all the time and everywhere. And it was really an eye-opener for me. And it was the one time I actually refused to finish the questionnaire because I really didn't want to give them any more ideas where to put more advertisements. I really... But actually, they phoned me and I kind of said, do you not want to, you know? And I said, no, really, you know, I really do not want to fill in this questionnaire. And then she kind of said, but you do you not want to know where you can find a really good advertising? And it was kind of, no, I really don't. So they're still contacting me, but I haven't filled in that one. But it was really an eye-opening. We are not aware of how much input we're having all the time, yeah? Constantly. There's constantly noise, there's constantly visual input, there's constantly anything that is coming to our senses. And I think in some businesses or in some clothes shops or something like that, they have actually also started to play with smells, yeah? Because if something smells pleasant, yeah, you're more likely to purchase something. The Buddha says, you might be aware of the fire sermon. He says, you know, the senses are on fire. Yeah, the eyes are on fire, the ears are on fire, the nose is on fire, the tongue is on fire, the body is on fire, the mind is on fire. And what he means is kind of that our senses, our whole sense apparatus actually is kind of always looking for something. Yeah, we're always kind of wanting some kind of stimulation, some kind of something that is interesting, something that is pleasant. Yeah, we're always looking outside. And of course, this is also why advertising, in a sense, is so successful and telling us the stories. But I wonder if you have noticed here on retreat, you know, if you kind of ended in the morning, kind of, you know, taking some of the jars and actually looking what is written on there, and then finding yourself waking up in the middle of it, wondering what you're actually doing. You know, but this is our senses, this is our visual sense actually trying to look for input, you know, just something. Or the notice board, you know, going and passing by, reading it for the fifth time. And I certainly remember being in front of it, and then kind of, you know, I read it, and then I kind of think, but I don't actually know, I need this information, you know, I'm just reading because I'm reading, in a sense. So really our senses are kind of always, they're always looking out for something. And another example, which I also found very interesting, I really love flowers that smell. And then I noticed, you know, when there are flowers, they're very beautiful, and then I go and I usually smell at the flowers. If they don't smell, it's actually almost as if I don't see the flower anymore. It kind of almost disappears for me, non-existent. Yeah. So it's kind of, and once I noticed, of course, then I can open up again, you know, and look at it. But it's kind of, we're really looking for very specific experiences, for very specific input. So also being on retreat, you might want to check out on your walks or when you're around, you know, which is your main sense, what do you use, and what you're going, what is, where is your sense going out towards, yeah? Yeah. Where are you going towards? So when we are here and the silence starts to show up a bit more, maybe we kind of start moving towards the one picture, which is the light background with just the red dots, or maybe a couple of others, you know, and we start to be able to see more distinct. That actually is when we really can start with our inside practice, when we can really investigate the phenomena that turn up. You know, when we really can experience and investigate, the, for example, the five hindrances quite normally. They will turn up uninvited, unwished for, but you know for sure they will turn up. And you know, you probably know the formula, you probably know rain, you know, you recognize them, you accept them, you investigate, you know, how are they, how do they feel, how do they sense in the body, what thoughts are coming up, any emotions involved with that. And then we don't try to identify with that. Yeah, we realize it's not just me. It's not just, something that I am doing that is me and I am doing this. Yeah, this is personal. Yeah, we just realize this is something which arises and passes away. I did not invite it. It is not me. It's not me that wanted to just have this restlessness all over me, you know, for the next half hour. I didn't ask that, you know. I didn't say, now is the perfect point. Please come now. Yeah. And this is really where it's important to have this kind of ease and curiosity and kindness around that, yeah. When we have already a bit of stillness, yeah, and we can see clearly what is arising and passing away, then it is really important to actually be kind and really look at the phenomena that is turning up in your mind. This is kind of the sensitivity, you know, I'm also talking about, you know. We can more easily sense what is happening to us. And once we see it, it's not so personal, you know, it's not me, it's also easier to let go, you know. So they do turn up, you know, and we see them, and we know they're here, they know that feels like that. Okay, you again, okay, welcome. And then it's also easier to kind of let go of that. So we can start to disentangle, and our senses also, the kind of, you know, they start to relax. We're not searching so much outwards anymore, yeah. It's a leaning back, a relaxing into. And possibly we also can see the conditions maybe that lead to some of the hindrances, or maybe the conditions that lead to some of the really beautiful mind states. Yeah. Yeah. What helped me to relax? What helped me to be collected? What helped me to see clearly? Yeah. Once we see this impersonality, this I'm not doing this, you know, this is just, the anger is just turning up, I didn't invite it, it just came, it went. Once I'm more kind with myself, what actually really happens and what is very, very beautiful, I also can recognize it and see it in others. And I don't get so much blown away anymore. Yeah, if somebody is angry, yeah, I know much more about my own anger and understand it much more, yeah, so I'm not so reactive anymore. So reactivity goes down. And more understanding and kindness towards the other person might turn up. It might not always be like that, but just maybe when coming off retreat, you know, just for the first couple of days. So maybe there's more of a spaciousness and openness and this inner stillness that actually can hold others' emotion much more freely and much more easily. So when I start to see the phenomena, I also want to see, because it looks as if it's the light background doesn't change. But, you know, if you have a lot of red dots, you know, this will also change slightly the background. So I don't want to give you the impression, you know, this is a stillness that in a sense doesn't move, you know, something permanent. You know, this is nothing permanent. This is something which the dots can color the background, but also the other way, you know, the background probably can do something towards the phenomena that turn up. Yeah, they connect it. And in that sense, there are actually two paths, you know. If you could say the silence, the light background, the silence bit, you know, that could be the path of samatha practice, yeah. This is where we cultivate stillness. This is where we cultivate tranquility. This is where we really try to actually not look at the phenomena, but really try to cultivate an awareness that is quite clear and still. But, you know, samatha in a sense makes only sense if you also kind of use it together with looking at the phenomena. As I said, you know, this is maybe a picture for vipassana practice, yeah? The phenomena that turn up and our investigation into it. So these two paths in this one picture. So if you take away this one picture, you know, the kind of two practices that actually together can give us insight and understanding and tranquility and a different way of looking at things. So I'd like you to actually also maybe just for yourself to, you know, how do you, in your life, you know, do you have a practice of inviting stillness, silence, tranquility into your daily life? You know, you come on retreat, quite clearly you have an interest, quite clearly you want to practice this more, quite clearly you want to have more of this and an experience. You know, but what can we actually do, or what do you do if you just maybe contemplate for a minute, you know, where or how do you actually reduce maybe input, or what do you do in your life to create a bit of silence and stillness in your practice, in your daily life? Are there places, are there ways? Yeah. Have you changed, yeah, since you started your practice? Yeah. What has changed in your life? What is supporting the stillness? What is supporting tranquility in your life? Or maybe it's not possible. Maybe it's difficult. I mean, for sure, as I said before, surely we can try to reduce input, you know. We can watch less television or just choose, you know, which programs we're going to watch. And then there's another part which is quite important. This kind of ethics is also something which kind of, in a sense, supports us in our practice and helps us to kind of make the decisions that maybe, you know, stop us maybe proliferating into some actions that then maybe, you know, we carry within us. Yeah, there are some, you know, if you don't take too much, if you just take all that which is necessary to, you know, to what we need, yeah, then that already is less input. Yeah, this is less what we need, less we want. Not harming others is going to support our practice. If I realize, you know, there might be some attraction to someone that is not available to me, you know, just knowing this and letting go of that will support my practice, will support my tranquility. And of course, I mean, as we also said on the first day, you know, substances, yeah. You really would like to have a clear mind, yeah. A cloudy mind is difficult to stay clear, it's difficult to calm. So I'd like to finish with a little verse from the Buddha. It's from the Nalaka Sutta, Samyutta Nikaya 3.11. Nalaka was a person that was already quite advanced. I mean, the story is also a bit mystical, but there's a beautiful verse in that sutta. And he's asking the Buddha, and actually it was the Buddha who was not yet a Buddha, about how do you practice so you become awakened. And then the Buddha that was not a Buddha came with a very, very long and detailed teaching on how to practice. And then towards the end he says to Nalaka, "Know from the rivers, in clefts and in crevices, those in small channels flow noisily. The great rivers flow silent. Whatever's not full makes noise. Whatever is full is quiet." Yeah. I read it again. "Know from the rivers in clefts and in crevices, those in small channels flow noisily. The great rivers flow silent. Whatever's not full makes noise. Whatever is full is quiet." And with that, I'd like to finish my talk, and I'd like you to continue with your practice. And maybe, you know, once in a while in your meditation or when you're walking or whatever you're doing, see if you can find this stillness or a place inside yourself, yeah, where you can lean into, and that can be a support for your practice. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you.